This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They're both calling for unity, but I think their differences in the kind of concept are fundamental. And that's where I think the problem is going to break down. And so they're calling for it. But in fact, it may well be partisanship in disguise.
That's John Geer, a distinguished professor of political science at Vanderbilt University, saying President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump are both calling for unity, but it's not what you think. Details coming up. Also, President Paul Kagame appears to have won another overwhelming election to stay in office. And more police clashes with protesters in the Kenyan capital today. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. An assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump has sparked heavy scrutiny for the security service, the agency tasked with protecting current and former presidents, to determine how a lone gunman was able to overcome tight security at a campaign rally Saturday. The investigation also explores the role of local law enforcement agencies at the rally in Pennsylvania. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas explains the goals of the investigation.
At President Biden's direction, an independent review of the incident will be conducted, one that will examine the Secret Service's and other law enforcement actions before, during, and after the shooting, to identify the immediate and longer-term corrective actions required to ensure that the no-fail mission of protecting national leaders is most effectively met.
We have VOA's Arash Arbasadi on the phone to discuss the key issues that investigators are looking at, along with making sure security is even tighter at the four-day Republican National Convention, which opened yesterday. Thanks for joining us, Arash.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
So, with all of the security at the rally, how could this happen?
Well, for starters, I do want to say I'm not necessarily a security expert, but I've spent years working with security experts and spent quite a bit of time speaking with one this morning. We're looking at something called concentric rings of security. You have one that is the security detail for the VIP, in this case, former President Trump. You have another ring of security that is basically monitoring the crowd inside the rally. And then there's the external ring of security that is often local law enforcement. And local law enforcement know the ground, they know the area better than anybody else. They know what to look for, what stands out, what's out of place here today. And so when we're dealing with the outer ring of security as well, with local law enforcement, state law enforcement, there is a communication potentially, I'm being told, potentially a communication breakdown that happened between the agent in charge of the Secret Service and that outer ring of security.
Arash, any news on the 20-year-old shooter who was quickly shot dead after he injured Trump and killed and wounded several at the rally?
Yeah, I mean, just a few points about him. His name is Thomas Matthew Crooks. He's a 20-year-old from Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, just about 30 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, where I'm from. The FBI said they believe he had bomb-making materials in the car that he drove to the rally. They believe he acted alone. Investigators found no threatening comments on social media accounts. That's something that stands out to me. We do know that he was also a registered Republican. And he also seems to have been a smart kid. He received an award for math and science along with some of his fellow graduating seniors a few years ago, according to a local news outlet in the Pittsburgh area. He worked at a nursing home. And we do know that when the shooting prior to the shooting, a local law enforcement officer, after, pleas from the crowd with people pointing to, hey, there's somebody up there, a local police officer started to climb the outside wall of that building. Crooks turned and saw him, turned his gun to him. The police officer dropped down, and then that's when Crooks turned and opened fire, and that is when the Secret Service snipers returned defensive fire.
Amazing. As we speak, the convention is going on, Arash, but what changes have been made for the convention?
So, you know, speaking on the convention, I'll tell you this. My expert says the convention itself might have had something to do with some of these security breakdowns because the Secret Service is spread thin. They are going from one campaign stop to another. They're also safeguarding the RNC. But the RNC coordinator for the Secret Service had a comment yesterday. Her name is Audrey Gibson Cachino. She made a comment, I believe, over the weekend where she said it's an 18-month process of security. So we're looking at a year and a half that they've been preparing for this. The mayor of Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson, he also came out and said the same thing, that it's an 18-month process. They're very comfortable with it. They have state, local, federal. It's what's called, the federal government describes it as a national special security event. It is the highest security designation the federal government provides. So in theory, the RNC is going to be about as safe of a place as you can be in the United States.
VOA's Arash Arbasadi, thank you for your input.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
The weekend assassination attempt on Donald Trump has silenced much of the chatter over President Joe Biden's political future. But as Trump charged forward yesterday, appearing at the Republican National Convention and naming vice presidential pick, the Biden administration prepared for a campaign stop today in this uncertain stage in the presidential race. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
The stark differences between the two main presidential campaigns were further illuminated Monday with heated, energetic scenes.
You don't like Trump? So what? We don't care.
As Republicans nominated Donald Trump at their convention in Milwaukee.
Greatest president that's ever lived, and that's Donald J. Trump.
And from the Democrat-run White House, cool reserve from President Joe Biden, who has urged the nation to bring down the temperature on political rhetoric after the shocking weekend assassination attempt on Trump. On Monday, he told NBC's Lester Holt that he still deeply disagrees with Trump and with the inflammatory and vicious way Trump and his base communicate grievances, and asked whether he thought the shooting would change the trajectory of the presidential race.
I don't know, and you don't know either.
But it seems to have resolved the last political cliffhanger, the national debate over whether Biden's poor debate performance meant he should step aside. Jim Kessler is executive vice president for think tank Third Way.
I expect that Joe Biden has weathered this storm, and this question about whether he should drop out is mostly in the rearview mirror, but he needs to perform well.
Trump on Monday made his post-shooting debut to a thunderous reception and a crowd that shouted, fight, fight, fight. Biden also criticized Trump in the interview.
Look, I'm not the guy that said I want to be a dictator on day one. I'm not the guy that refused to accept the outcome of the election. I'm not the guy who said that won't accept the outcome of this election.
Both men have called for unity in the wake of Trump's shooting. But analysts say that word may not mean what you think it means. John Geer is a distinguished professor of political science at Vanderbilt University.
They're both calling for unity, but I think their differences in the kind of concept are fundamental. And that's where I think the problem is going to break down. And so they're calling for it. But in fact, it may well be partisanship in disguise.
So what happens now as these two grandfathers sprint to the end of a contest so grueling, so bitter, so emotionally charged, and so consequential, and yet with such a tiny margin of victory? I don't know. And neither do you. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
As reported, the Republican Party convention started yesterday. The first day usually is fairly quiet, but this one had some big drama as former President Donald Trump announced his vice presidential pick just 2 days after surviving an assassination attempt. VOA's Carol Van Dam is at the Republican convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and she starts out by telling me a little about the new vice presidential running mate.
There was overwhelming support for the U.S. Senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance, when his name was announced yesterday here in Milwaukee. He's a best-selling author who wrote the book Hillbilly Elegy. He's a Yale graduate, and he is incredibly young. He's only 39 years old. And, of course, former President Trump is 78 years old, so that adds a bit of youth to the ticket. The crowd gathered on the floor of the Pfizer Center was just electrified with the news. I spoke to a number of delegates shortly after the announcement yesterday. All were very enthusiastic about his pick. They said he would energize the ticket, that he's a smart man, and that he will do a lot to unify the Republican Party.
Did Trump make an appearance last night?
He did, Yehaz. He kind of mouthed the words thank you as he was stepping up onto the stage and he had a big white patch over his ear, the one that was injured in the assassination attempt that you mentioned. He didn't really speak. He just walked up with his VP candidate, J.D. Vance, and the place just exploded with, you know, happiest celebrations, applause, cheers. You know, in the past, Vance has been a strong critic of Trump, but has since said that he has changed his mind, and saying that he, Trump, changed his mind. And he's now, of course, one of his most ardent conservative supporters.
So what is on the schedule for today?
We're going to see more policy platform type of votes that are going on. Yesterday, they voted about the abortion kind of plank, the right to life plank. It was more of what Trump wanted, which is, you know, he is not in support of a federal ban on abortion. He wants to keep it kind of the way it is with a state by state decision, and that voted on and approved. And so we're going to see more things like that about probably immigration and other things that are, you know, the hot button type issues. And they'll work those out as we move on to Thursday, which is going to be the big night, the final night, when Trump himself will get up on stage and do his speech.
VOA's Carol Van Dab reporting from the Republican Convention Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. As reported, J.D. Vance joins the Republican presidential ticket as one of the youngest vice presidential candidates since Richard Nixon in 1952. The nomination puts his newcomer status and political inexperience to the test. Tina Tran reports.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to announce that Senator J.D. Vance has the overwhelming support of this convention to be the next Vice President of the United States.
It's an end to months of speculation. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump selected 39-year-old Ohio freshman Senator J.D. Vance as his vice presidential running mate on the first day of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. In a posting on Truth Social, Trump stated Vance is the person best suited to assume the vice presidency. Vance's political identity centers on his ties to the Rust Belt region of the U.S., and his populist sentiments align with Trump's appeal to the white working class.
Of the options that former President Trump had available to him, Senator Vance was the one who probably the most closely associated with President Trump's MAGA style and philosophy.
Vice presidential historian Joel Goldstein says the selection is unusual in that most VP picks are an attempt to reach voters outside of their existing base instead of those already in it. Again, Goldstein.
And so I think that what President Trump is hoping is that he will help energize some voters to vote who might not otherwise vote, that he will appeal to people who have a similar background as Senator Vance comes from.
Vance came to prominence in 2016 with his memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, which detailed the poverty of his upbringing and the industrial and economic decline of his hometown of Middletown, Ohio. Vance's parents divorced early in his childhood, and he was raised largely by his grandparents as his mother grappled with drug addiction. Enlisting in the Marine Corps after high school, Vance went on to graduate from The Ohio State University and Yale Law School. He worked as a venture capitalist in San Francisco for Silicon Valley entrepreneur Peter Thiel, who also donated $10 million to a super PAC, or political action committee, supporting Vance's run for Senate. A former critic of Trump, Vance once described the former president as reprehensible and called him America's Hitler. He has since become a staunch Trump supporter and advocate, but remains the least experienced of Trump's VP contenders. Here's Goldstein again.
I think that the attention that will be paid to the issue of presidential succession, both because of the age of the competing presidential candidates and because of the recent assassination attempt on President Trump's life, will raise questions in some voters' minds regarding Senator Vance's readiness to be president on day one. Given that Senator Vance has such relatively little experience in high governmental positions.
And in an increasingly divided political environment, as Trump calls for unity across the country, the extent to which his running mate will help heal or add to divisions remains to be seen. Hours after the assassination attempt on Trump, Vance blamed rhetoric by the Biden campaign as the cause. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. President Paul Kagame appears to have clinched another term in office, winning 99% of the vote for the second election in a row, according to provisional results from yesterday's election. We have on the phone VOA's Mariama Diallo, who is in Kigali, covering the election. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mariama.
Thank you so much, Yahya, for having me. With that kind of welcoming, I'm always very happy to be here.
So, Mariama, this outcome was widely expected. Is 66-year-old Kagame that well-liked, winning 99% of the vote?
Well, like one analyst that I have interviewed before about Rwandan politics, I think his famous line to me was that, you know, no one is that popular. 99% is a lot, and this time it's even more than 99%. It's 99.14 or 15% at this point. Like, you know, both candidates in the opposition couldn't even get 1% combined. So it is pretty high. But when you obviously you talk to the people who voted for him, I'm sure it's a number that they are very happy about, very satisfied about. You know, from everybody that we've interviewed, at least with Paul Kagame, I'm sure, you know, a result like that is a good result for them.
And the bottom line, Mariama, is what does this mean for Rwanda with its troubled relationship with neighboring DRC, for instance?
Yeah, I think actually Mr. Kagame talked about that a little bit during his presser over the weekend. He was asked questions about, you know, the ongoing insecurity on the eastern part of the country. He was asked if he, you know, like the saying that a lot of people, you know, agencies and other countries have accused Rwanda of meddling or of basically supporting the rebel group M23. And he basically refuted all that. He said that basically the DRC itself, the world likes to blame his country. They like to blame him, but the same blame is not given to the DRC. So those were his comments when that question was brought up.
Mariama, you are in Kigali right now, and briefly tell us how the country has changed since the genocide in 1994.
Support of President Kagame, that's what they tell you. When you ask them the question, you know, why do you support President Kagame? Why do you want him to be the next leader? They throw it back at you. They ask you, hey, have you seen Rwanda? Have you seen Kigali? Have you seen the development of infrastructure? Have you seen the progress the country has attained in the generation since 1994? So those are words. Obviously, being here, yes, yes. You can see the development. You can see the advancement compared to you know, other poor countries or other countries in general. So that is the point that is put forth certainly by his supporters, and that's the reason why they are not ready for change. Some of them have told me. You know, why change something that is working? So they like him, they trust him, the fact that also they think of him as the person who saved them from the genocide.
Great, great. VOA's Mariama Diallo reporting from Kigali. Thank you for your input. Businesses remain closed in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, today as police clashed again with anti-government protesters calling for an end to corruption and justice for victims of alleged police brutality. VOA's Ruben Chama spoke with Samuel Nyandemo, a development economist and a senior lecturer at the University of Nairobi. He began by explaining what has led to the current situation in Kenya, East Africa's largest economy.
I think, first of all, it's important to take note that these protests have been spearheaded by Gen Z. This is a younger generation in Kenya which has been pushed into the war. Most of them are graduates from various universities, domestically and internationally. But they are jobless. But all that said and done, what has caused all this mess is poor governance and high levels of corruption and misrule and mismanagement of the country's resources. But all is not lost because the younger generation wants to put order in society. They want to bring sense into the government so that the government can actually enhance good governance, transparency, and accountability. The manifesto of the government, which is in power, was to enhance employment generation and create a conducive environment for doing businesses, upon which now the youths have been pushed into the corner. The promises are not yet being implemented, and they are disgruntled at the level of wastages from the government side in terms of resource usage. This has aggravated the whole situation, resulting into demonstrations countrywide. Now, how are these demonstrations likely to impact on development? They are negatively going to impact on development because the finance bill of 2024 has been put aside, meaning that the government might not be able to implement most of its development agenda.
There has been ongoing protests now in Kenya for a number of weeks. The protests still continue today in many parts of the country. How does it affect the businesses in Kenya?
Take into account that most of the businesses during demonstrations come to a standstill. Nairobi now, within the Central Business District area and its surroundings, most businesses are non-operational. And this is going to affect not only revenue generation, but also it's going to slumber many economic activities. Most of the tourists now are scared coming into the country. Kenya relies heavily on the incomes raised from foreign tourists.
Professor Nyandemo, how serious is the debt and tax situation in Kenya?
Kenya has already surpassed the limit when you look at the GDP ratio versus the debts. Total debt of Kenya now is about 11.6 trillion. This implies that Kenya is living beyond its means. Out of 100 Kenyan shillings collected, 69 shillings goes into servicing debts, both domestic and foreign debts, leaving a very small portion of the total revenue raised for purposes of government expenditures. That has pushed the government into further borrowing, which negatively is impacting on the cost of living because the government cannot be able to sustain itself.
And finally, how might these protests shape the government moving forward?
The government has been pushed into the corner. It must go back to the drawing board, reshape its structure in terms of appointing competent civil servants and a competent cabinet. That is the only way through which the GNC will be able to be convinced that the government, through the president, they are serious to put order in society. Failure to which, I think there will be further demonstrations whose end result will be very disastrous.
That was Samuel Nyandemo, a development economist and a senior lecturer at the University of Nairobi, speaking with reporter Ruben Chama. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.